This is episode number 237 with director John Chu. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. Welcome everyone back to the podcast. Very excited about this episode. It's with a buddy of mine named John Chu, who's an American film director, film producer, screenwriter, and cinematographer, best known for directing the movies Step Up 2, The Streets, Step Up 3D, Justin Bieber's Never Say Never, and G.I. Joe Retaliation. He is an alumni of the University of Southern California School of Cinema Television, where he won many awards, and he's currently filming Gem in the Holograms. And the five things you're going to take away from this, there's going to be a lot of takeaways from this, and I didn't want John to stop because his storytelling is so incredible. But you're going to hear about the story of how Steven Spielberg found one of John's movies while he was still in school and bought another one of his ideas later, how he got into making dance movies, why he will always make movies even when no one pays him, and what he learned about Justin Bieber from making that movie as well. Lots of other incredible stories about creativity, storytelling, and how to live an incredible life. I think you're going to fall in love with this one as much as I've fallen in love with John. So make sure to check out all the show notes. We'll have some other videos of what John's up to at lewishowes.com/237. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive into this episode with the one, the only John Chu. Welcome everyone back to the School of Greatness podcast. We've got John Chu in the house. What's going on,
What's going on, man?
It's good to see you, brother.
Here. Good to be here.
We met, I think, two or three years ago. At Yale's house.
Yes.
Is that where we originally met?
I think so. That might have been, we might have been in, we have a lot of mutual friends, so I'm sure we were in the same area before that, but I think that was the first time we met.
Yeah. And I think I was sitting next to you. We were playing like Cards Against Humanity, or what we, Apples to Apples, or Cards Against something. What was it called?
It was Cards Against Humanity.
Right? Yeah. And I think at one point, I didn't know who you were. I was like, cool, this guy's name is John. Like, all right, cool. But it was a great event, or it was a great like little house party. Yeah. And then we were playing Cards Against Humanity. And I think I remember, like, one of the cards was your name or something. Was that right?
I believe it was my name or one of my movies.
Your movie
I don't
or something.
Fully remember.
It was, like, the director of something or whatever, right? And you were like, oh, that's me. And I was like, what? Who are you? So let's talk a little bit about who you are. You're a director of...
I don't know about you, but when around 3 p.m. hits, I find myself craving the right refreshment to get me through that mid-afternoon slump. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea is full-flavored sweet tea, but without the sugar and the calories. It might take several bottles for you to believe that a delicious sweet tea can really have zero sugar and zero calories. But you know what they say, life is full of surprises. Or in this case, full of flavor. New Pure Leaf Zero Sugar Sweet Iced Tea. Try it to believe it. For 20% off your next 12 pack, head to Amazon and use promo code 20PureLeaf. That's promo code 20PureLeaf for 20% off. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone if you only had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Okay, quick math. The less your business depends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/greatness. netsuite.com/greatness. Again, head to netsuite.com/greatness.
How many movies have you directed?
I've directed 7 movies now.
These are like main feature movies.
Yeah, studio features in the last 7 years, so about a movie a year.
And you're only 35, is that right?
Yeah, 35. Yeah. And but I feel like, you know, when you make a movie, you don't feel like that much time has passed, but then you realize, oh shoot, I'm 35 now. So I feel 28, but really.
There you go.
but no, I've been 7 movies, different genres, from documentaries to, you know, like the Justin Bieber movie to the Step Up dance movies to G.I. Joe action films. Uh-huh. So we have a big range of movies that I do, and but it's been a fun ride.
It's amazing. And what's the new movies coming out that you have?
Yeah, so right now I'm in it's an interesting challenge. I'm doing 2 movies at the same time. So I have, and 2 very different movies. I have Gem and the Holograms.
Okay.
Which is based off of an 80s cartoon. It's a musical. Teenage girls, who find fame on the internet. And, it's all original music. Worked with Scooter Braun, who's Justin's manager, you know very well.
Of course.
It's a great sort of fun, poppy, young, girl story.
Is it kind of like Glee?
It has a little bit of Glee-ness to it, but it definitely, you know, it's based off a comic book and cartoon series, so it has a little extra little thing to it. It has a little sci-fi element. There's a robot that speaks beatbox, and there's hologram. I mean, it's a very strange, fun movie. And then the other one that comes out next summer that I'm working on at the same time right now is Now You See Me 2, which is a sequel to a couple years ago a movie came out, Now You See Me. It has Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine,
a huge cast.
Mark Ruffalo, Jesse Eisenberg,
and the whole cast is coming back, right?
They're all coming back, and we've added a few new people, like Lizzie Kaplan, and Daniel Radcliffe is in it.
Really?
So yeah, it's a it's a fun cast, big cast, it's all magic. So
I love it. Now You See Me was great, in my opinion. You know, all the magic.
It's so fun, right? Yeah. It was a sort of a sleeper hit a couple years ago, made tons of money all around the world. Huge global audience.
And you weren't directing the first one.
I didn't do the first one. Right? Louis Leterrier, who is a master of that stuff, did that first one. So coming in is a little bit of a challenge. You know, you got to find your own voice in it, but not stir it up so much that it's a different movie. But we actually have a very different take. We get to go to the other side of the curtain and get to know these magicians more. When you have that caliber of cast, you can sort of let them go, and they create some really great things. And we had a group of magicians who helped us out. So
you've got like the top magicians in the world, right?
We had mentalists. We had cardistry guys. We had sleight of hand guys. We're all like around a table creating magic tricks of how these magicians can escape this, you know, this magic trap. And it's a fun environment.
Amazing.
To be around. So everyone's learning magic all the time. So it's a fun one.
And so a lot of these guys, the professionals, are they coming in and actually doing the tricks on film? Is it their hands that are like flipping the, you know, throwing the cards or doing like the crazy
We try not
waterfalls?
To do that, actually.
Really?
These actors are so involved in their craft that they want to learn how to throw cards. So Dave Franco got so good at throwing cards, and Jesse Eisenberg and Mark Ruffalo, they wanted to like get in there. Woody Harrelson, who learned mentalism and can go into any like place and do some of these.
He can actually do it.
Yeah, he can actually do it. It's pretty amazing.
Holy cow.
You know, of course, some of the more super skilled stuff, it's a movie, so we try to do some of those things. But making a magic movie is tough because you want to show the audience that you're not faking anything, that this is like, so you can't cut around stuff, you can't do camera tricks. So we try to do everything as practical as possible. And so you'll see that in the movie, you'll feel that in the movie. Even if you don't fully notice it, I think when you go back and watch the movie, you'll realize we actually did these tricks.
Interesting. I love it. Yeah. So you went to USC, correct?
Film school. To USC Film School. Yep, right down the street.
Now, you can actually see it down here, right? You can see it in my window.
On a good day.
On a good day, it's a little hazy.
I see a little bit. It's my dorm room, right?
There you go. And I read online that Steven Spielberg, he found one of your videos or one of your movies. Is that right?
Yeah, it was a very interesting period of time. I was in school. I'd done a couple shorts. I got some attention, mm-hmm. but you know, you're in school. This is 2001.
Yeah.
So there was no YouTube, so nothing could go sort of viral online. But the,
so you had to go hustle around the different,
you had to hustle around a little bit, but I'd done a short film that was a musical. About the secret life of mothers. It was very strange.
We love musicals.
I don't know why. I'm not a dancer myself. I don't sing. I, you know, a few drinks, maybe I'll get up on the karaoke bar, but that's about it. But I love dancers and I love singers. Mm. I love being around them. And they were all my friends. So yeah. They're the only ones who would help me out when I had the camera. So I somehow fell into that world and I love it. But, so I made a short film and it got around town, and you could only get like a VHS or DVD copy of it. And somehow I didn't send it to Steven Spielberg. I didn't, look for that. It somehow ended up on his desk. And I just one day got a call from my agent who said, rumor has it that Steven Spielberg has seen your short and I don't know what it means. This was a Friday night. He's like, I don't know what it means, but just know that
wow.
you heard that we're not sure if it's true or not. I was like, okay. But of course, all weekend long, I'm thinking about it. What does that even mean? How does that? And then
you're like 21, 22 at the time.
Yeah, or... I'm 22 at the time. Okay. Yeah, and so then I get a call from my agent the next day, and he's like, "Hey, just so you know, I know it's Saturday, but I was like with my family, but I got all these calls from Steven's like agents and people, and he really wants to sit down with you tomorrow at his house
on a Sunday.
On a Sunday, I was like." Yeah, I'm there, sure. I'm playing it totally cool.
Oh, let me check my calendar.
Meanwhile, I'm like jumping up and down, going crazy.
He's up in the hills or Bel Air or somewhere, right? He's got some, you
exactly.
know.
So we call back and we actually, it ends up being on the Monday.
Okay.
Go into his office and he was totally cool. Like it was just me and him.
Wow.
We talked for a couple hours. It wasn't just like a fast, hey, great thing. Here's my card. Go. Yeah, I'll call you. It was more, we talked about musicals. We talked about movies. We talked about, all sorts of things. And he was genuinely interested and genuinely present. He brought in his other sort of lieutenants at DreamWorks at the time. And at that point, I remember thinking my only goal was to get a second meeting. Like that's my only in this whole, whatever happens. Stay focused on getting a second. So like, I was like, oh, you know, we have this. He's like, what do you want to do? Do you have projects? And you know, he's really involved with USC, funding it and stuff. So yeah. I think there's a sense of pride there too. That
he wanted to give back and support.
Exactly. Exactly. So I was like, well, I have a feature that I've been writing with my buddy, Jason Russell, who actually, started Invisible Children. But at that time we were both in film school together. So, I said, well, yeah, I have this thing. And he's like, oh, I'd love to hear it. I was like, oh, I have it ready. And he's like, oh, let's meet this week. I was like,
second
perfect.
Meeting.
So second meeting, exactly. Totally made that happen. So I went back to my apartment and Jason was there because, he was excited just to
hear about what happened.
No idea that I pitched this thing.
Wow.
That was only really half together, to be honest. Like,
you're like
we had
we're
like,
do this now.
We had talked about it over a beer, I think, at one point. So we're like, oh shit, we have 4 days
to write
this thing together.
Wow.
So, his now wife Danica and myself, we just like stayed up all night for 4 days doing this thing. And I'd never done a pitch before. And so on that Friday, or I think it was a Friday, we go into DreamWorks and sitting at the table for my first pitch ever is, Steven Spielberg, Walter Parks, Lori McDonald, his wife. They were the sort of the heads of DreamWorks at the time. We had Adam Goodman, who was at that time an executive at DreamWorks. Mm-hmm. He eventually becomes the president of Paramount, where there's a whole other story about that. But and we had Mike DeLuca as well. So this and Steven Spielberg. So this
it's
room
like
is like the powerhouse.
Wow.
And, so we come in there, these little, you know, these young, never done a pitch before, and we bring in this chest of costumes and pictures. And so we start pitching the story. And every time we go to a new scene, we have pictures and hat changes and costume changes.
Wow.
I mean, it is the most ridiculous thing.
They're probably like, who are these guys?
It's like the scene in Moulin Rouge where they're like putting on the outfits and they're running out and coming back in. I mean, they must have been laughing after. Now looking back, it is so embarrassing.
Wow.
And, But they were very gracious. They listened to the whole hour performance of this thing. They bought it.
Really?
And so,
so it worked.
So it worked somehow. I don't know what happened.
Out of pity, maybe.
Yes, yes. But and we never actually made it, but we did set it up there. We developed it for years. But that just the fact that Stephen would reach out and make that kind of notice and take the time means a lot. In the business, everybody paid attention. Nobody knew who I was. So that, that sort of pushed me into, the world, into the real world here. So that was a very, interesting time. But what was interesting too was, so Jason Russell was supposed to leave for Sudan at the time because he wanted to do this documentary about Sudan. This was before Invisible Children where he started, it was about Ugandan children. So, I was like, why are you leaving right now? We just pitched to Steven Spielberg. He's like, I am meant to go right now. I know he's like, I went to film school. Obviously, this is our dream, but I'm like, I feel like I need to do this trip.
Yeah.
I feel called. And I was like, okay, bro, but this is the whole, like, you go to film school to get this opportunity.
To get Steven Spielberg to be on your team.
Yeah. Totally didn't understand him leaving, but he laughed. He's like, just keep me updated. And, while he's there, I call him when our deal closes. I'm like, dude, we got it. We're doing this. I was like, God, come back. He's like, I just met these kids in Uganda and I made a promise to them that I would tell their story and I can't leave.
Oh my goodness.
And that's sort of what started Invisible Children and that sort of 12, 13 year journey of them. And so for me, seeing how that company was born, was two paths sort of diverged in a moment, and that's how I know. That's why I love Jason so much and know his heart and all that stuff. But it was very interesting because we started the very same place of a film school, and we get along creatively and all that stuff. He did this obviously thing for his bigger purpose, which is great.
But he could have been a big director like you if you had totally stayed in it, and you guys would have made movies together, or he would have done his own thing.
Exactly.
That's interesting. Exactly. It's interesting that he would have the courage to leave. And go do something he had no idea what was going to come from when he had the biggest opportunity of his life.
It was insane. It's an insane decision. And I wish I'd filmed that moment. I wish other people could have seen those conversations because I had no idea what he was talking about.
I'm like,
you're going to go to this unknown and make this promise to a kid that you met.
That you don't know.
Some little town that you don't know. And do you know how long that could be? And do you know that you probably won't even be able to fulfill that promise?
Wow.
And he's like, yeah, but I have to try. And that was it. It was very simple for him. There was no like, ooh, maybe if I – he was like, no, there's no way.
Amazing. That's inspiring.
That was really inspiring. I always think about that moment in my life when those things come up, even when little things, not even things that big, although that didn't feel that – big at that moment of him making that decision, other than you're losing a huge opportunity.
Yeah.
But though you realize those little choices, the way you see the world or the way you see your path can affect your whole life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always think about how brave he was to do that.
That's cool. Do you think that you'd be where you're at now if you didn't have that opportunity with Spielberg then? You'd be making features and doing everything you've done, or is that kind of the catalyst that really...
It definitely was the catalyst to get me into the studio world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't doubt that I wouldn't be making movies. Maybe it wouldn't be movies. Maybe it would be TV shows. Maybe it would be wedding videos. Maybe it would be whatever. But since I was in third grade, I've always made movies on my own.
Yeah.
And that I know for a fact, whether getting paid for it or not, I would always do that. And I will always do that in the future.
Yeah.
My movies may all bomb and I may never get another movie in Hollywood ever again, but I know I'll still be making stuff.
Right.
That's just in my nature. And that's just what I'm doing.
And what I think I read online that your parents, you grew up in San Francisco area, right?
Yeah. Palo Alto.
Palo Alto. Mm-hmm. And your parents would give you the camera to like film going on vacation or whatever, but you decided to like make movies instead of filming like the moments that you're supposed to film, right?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, when you give a kid a camera, what are you supposed to do? I'm just bored on these vacations. Right. They were so great. They came from China. Mm-hmm. My mom came from Taiwan, into the Bay Area. They didn't know a word of English.
Wow.
And they wanted to give everything to the kids. So they met in the Bay Area, but they started a little restaurant. It's been there for 46 years now.
It's like a famous restaurant now, right?
Yeah, it's been there for so long.
What's it called?
It's called Chef Chew's. It's in Los Altos, which is next to Stanford. So at the center of the Silicon Valley before it was called the Silicon Valley. And they grew with the neighborhood. And we got the benefit of growing with that neighborhood as well.
Wow.
Being in that environment where the engineer was celebrated. Nobody was rich and famous. It was just about like, what are you making and how is that changing the world, or how is that affecting how we live?
Yeah.
And they were crazy ideas, from people riding around in electric cars in the 90s to people bringing in software. You could see them working at lunch, right? At their desk. And I got the benefit of having, you know, they would find out, oh, Chef Chu's son likes to make these home videos. You know, we have this computer that we're working on now that can do like dissolves and interesting things with video. And so they would bring in their beta computers, and Adobe would bring in their software, all like testing mode, all beta mode, with no manuals, and they would give it to my dad to give to me.
And you'd be like editing videos on there.
Literally, I would just have to sit there and be like, how do I do this, and figure it out. So I was ahead by a lot in those times. And that was, you know, you're sort of grown by your community. That was definitely something that was very rare and weird. And looking back, I just was very lucky to be in that environment at the time. But they gave, my parents were always giving to the kids. I'm the youngest of five kids. And they said, they never let us work at the restaurant.
Really?
They always said, they didn't want us to get used to fast cash. They were like, do everything we couldn't do first. Like, go after the things that you won't be able to do later one day, possibly. Just like explore. And so they put us in music classes, dance classes. We went to, I did animation school. I did theater.
Wow.
We did sports camps. We did, we traveled. So every year we would travel as well. And that's where I got the video camera at first.
Amazing.
And then would make little mini movies with my brothers and sisters who didn't really want to do the movies.
You're like, we're doing this.
Yeah. And I had a lot of toys. So I am convinced that my toy collection, I get passed down all the toys from my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And I would figure out ways to convince my parents to get me that extra special toy. And I'd have week long adventures in my backyard.
Wow.
And I'm convinced that that's where I actually learned filmmaking and storytelling.
Amazing.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share, because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am, or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all. Or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life, so don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent, or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What is it about film that you love the most? Is it the idea creation of, I've got this idea for a great story? Is it the actual filming? Is it working with the cast and the crew? Is it the post-production? Is it when it's finally out there and you get the reaction of the 13-year-old girls who are watching Justin Bieber movies screaming, crying
That's
next
fun.
To you in the movie
fun.
Theater.
Yeah.
You're like, how did I create something where people are crying their eyes out, you know?
Yes.
You know, something before you answer that, I watched the Never Say Never movie like yes. 3 or 4 times, and every time I cried, man.
Nice.
During the grandparents section, yes. I was like, this is unbelievable what this kid has gone through.
You should have seen me behind the camera. I was also crying.
He's like shaking, like, ah.
Yeah. Yeah, luckily I wasn't holding the camera. But no, those moments are really genuine in that. And I genuinely grew to love the kid because I did not – I can't call him the kid anymore.
Right.
The man.
Yeah.
Justin Bieber, because I did know that too much going into that movie.
Wow.
But I wanted to make the movie about someone who didn't know anything about him and learning step by step – who this person is. You see this person on YouTube and they come across as, oh, there's just a pop star. But then when you actually go back, you see he's a boy that has extreme talent, and you recognize that boy as someone that either you know or that you were, and you follow him mm-hmm. on his journey. And I think that was the inspirational part for me. It's a fairy tale in a way, and it's actually happening in real time.
It was unbelievable. I mean, the storytelling, I mean, I guess you weren't really telling the story. You were just sharing the story mm-hmm. of it. Was just incredible. I mean, the way you put that movie must have hit some big records too, right? Did it sell extremely well?
Yeah, it did super well. Made $100 million worldwide.
Insane.
And for something that was supposed to be just a concert movie, you know, we were like, well, let's make a real documentary about this kid's life. Mm. Let's make a biography, but the music not just be concert songs, but actually be a musical documentary. So when words aren't enough, the music helps tell that story. We recontextualize his music that sounds like, oh, that's just about first love.
No.
It's actually about him, you know, falling in love with the business at that time when he came into LA, or that's about the deal that he made with whatever. So that was really fun to flip his music and say, how would you use that in a musical about his life? And that's how we sort of formatted.
Would you say, what was the big movie you did before that? And I want to get back to you answering the question in a second, but what was the big movie you did before that?
Right before that, I'd done 2 Step Up movies. So
okay.
I'd done Step Up to the Streets and Step Up 3D.
Okay.
And so because of my 3D efforts on Step Up, they knew they wanted to do the Justin thing in 3D. So Adam Goodman, who I had met at that original meeting with Steven, had at that point, this was like 4 or 5 years later, you know, maybe 6 years later, become the president of Paramount. And so he had this on his desk, and he had known, we had always talked about doing a project. We never actually got there actually making the project. So he called me and said, hey, I have we always wanted to work together. I want to bring you over to Paramount. But I have this project first that I need help on. And he's like, it has to come out in like 6 or 7 months. He's like, I have no idea what to do with it. And it's in 3D. So have you ever heard of this guy, Justin Bieber? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, that song, Baby. I was like, oh yeah, that Baby song. Okay. And so then I went home and I started watching YouTube videos. I just wanted to get a sense of who. First, I was like, I don't do concert movies. Mm-hmm. I don't know what I would do with this. So then I go home and I start watching the YouTube videos, and you can actually go to his first video he ever posted, and you can go to the first comment of the first video ever posted. You can go to the second comment. You can go to the third comment. And in real time, you can read how this thing unfolded. You can go to that second video, that fourth video, and you can go to those comments, and you're literally tracking this, and it's like you're going back in time.
Wow.
And I thought that was so surreal to experience the story in that way. I was like, if we can bring this type of thing into a movie, I thought that was really interesting.
You guys did a brilliant job of that too. You know, in the introduction, I remember like seeing the comments showing up and the views, or the views going up. It was really,
that's actually
cool.
How I first saw him, because they sent me an email with the link. So they didn't send me to. It was my friend actually. It was probably like 6 months prior, and I had forgotten about this. But when I was making the movie, I remembered that I got an email saying, hey, check this kid out. You always get emails of like, check this cat out. Like, check out the sneezing panda. And then,
sneezing panda.
And I remember getting this email and then clicking it and be like, oh, it's another person singing on YouTube. And then all of a sudden watching the whole thing and be like, whoa, this kid is amazing.
Yeah.
And
how,
I didn't know
how
that.
How old was he then?
At that time he was 14, 13.
Yeah.
And I never connected with that guy being Justin Bieber. So I was like, that's how I want to start the movie. I want to start the movie with, you could be anybody getting any sort of link, and when you click on this, you're going to see a kid that blows you away, and you don't know what he becomes, but I'm going to show you what he becomes.
Well, I just got chills when you said that, man. I'm like, feeling it, because I was going back in the movie. I remember that whole unfolding of that.
Yeah, that was a key element for us of how we wanted to tell that story.
Yeah.
And I remember pitching this to Scooter at the time. Like, okay, this is how I'm going to start the movie. I mean, I sort of painted the whole picture.
What do you think about it?
I remember just silence, and he looked at me, and he's like, I like that.
So he didn't pitch it to you. You didn't know Scooter at this time.
No, I didn't really know. When I first had my comp, so Adam said, I want you to do this movie. I said, I'm open to it. He's like, well, you have to talk to his manager first. I was like, okay. He's like, he's this like 25-year-old kid. Dude.
Right.
I'm like, wait, I'm older than him.
Wow.
This is going to be really weird. So, I called Scooter called me and we got on the phone and he was like, I just want to say that, you know, you've done some, because the Step Up movies were distributed by Disney. He's like, you've done a bunch of Disney stuff. I just want to tell you that, I don't think Justin's a Disney person and this is not a Disney type movie. So I'm not quite sure you're the right person.
Wow.
I was like, okay, all right, good. I like an honest person here in Hollywood. You don't get those that very often. So, I laid it on the table. I was like, listen, bro, like, well, first of all, he said, oh, and you're a dancer, and that's not really what this is about. I'm like, one, I'm not a dancer. Two, the fact that you think I'm a dancer is great because when I do my movies, I jump into that world, and you should think I'm a dancer by seeing that movie.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I totally understand that, but most of my movies, whether it's dance or music or action, they're fairy tales. They're actually just sort of these parables and fairy tales that use these things as our language. And so in this one, this would be music. And so I pitched him sort of this concept of, I want to tell the story with the musical documentary part of it. And by the end of the conversation, it was like an hour and a half conversation. He's like, all right, you're the man. That was it. And we became like best friends then and introduced him to his wife.
Wow. You did.
Yeah.
You're
I did.
Just Neil.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
how did that happen?
Because
he told me like saw her on Twitter one day or something.
Yeah,
and, like, he saw her.
She had tweeted me something. Then he called me. Was like, "Who's that?"
Shut up.
I was like, "Oh, you know, she's coming into town. You should meet her." And it didn't work out at that point. We were doing Justin's tour for Believe at the point. Mm-hmm. The timing didn't work out. But then the next time he called me, she was in town and she was looking for a house because she was moving to LA. And then I got a call from Scooter. He's like, I think I just saw that girl from Twitter.
He's like hard stalking her.
Yeah. I'm like, bro, you've got to meet. He's like, I'm leaving town tomorrow. You got to meet today. And so I email them both and say, you know, it's hard to find great people in LA. I mean, I have these emails. It's really funny. And I said, you guys got to meet, and you got to do it today. And
because they were leaving, he was leaving tomorrow.
Yeah, he was leaving next day. Yeah. And then I sort of left it at that. And I was like, oh, I'm getting off this chain, so I don't want to know. And then, like, 2 weeks later, I get a call from Scooter. I don't call again. I just leave it at that. You know, who knows what happens? Everyone's very busy.
Sure.
Then he calls me, and he's like, hey, I'm in Paris. I'm like, great. He's like, someone wants to talk to you.
Shut up.
And it's, yeah, I'm like, oh, it's still
two
going.
Weeks ago.
You're on
long
a vacation. So,
amazing.
That's sort of how it all unfolded.
Wow. But, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's unbelievable. Okay, so I want to get back to the original question, what I asked before we went on this tangent.
Yes.
What's your favorite part about making a film? And do you call it a film or a movie? What's the technical term?
It could go either way.
A flick?
I say film, I say movie. It doesn't matter. You know, I think even in our conversation leading up to this question, I think what I originally thought intellectually, you're like, I love making movies to tell the thing that's in my heart. And of course, every movie, you have to find that what you want to say in this. Mm-hmm. It's a very rare opportunity to have the microphone.
Yeah.
As you know, and when you do get that opportunity, you want to make sure you're using it for something that's good.
It's powerful and
yes,
inspiring.
Powerful,
yeah.
Exactly. But the reality too, as I get older and as I do more and more, it's really, I think it's about the people that you meet and it's about the people that you learn about, whether it's actors learning about quirks and egos and how someone ticks and what makes you tick, what gets you to find something in a story or find something in a moment or discover something about emotion when you're dealing with a scene. It really actually is a very sort of meditative thing, because you get to explore every aspect of life that you probably would never get to experience in other ways.
Right.
And you get to be connected with people, and also your cinematographer, also your editors. You're sitting there day after day, not seeing your family or friends. You're going through ups and downs. You're going through notes. You're going through frustrations. You're going through triumphs.
Deleting stuff constantly.
Deleting things, starting back, and then going way back to the beginning. Like, maybe we were right on our first instinct. That journey, it's like giving birth every time to a new child. And it's painful.
You must be sore, man.
And it's sore. Yes. And when you're doing two, when you're doing twins, it's even more crazy.
Oh, man,
because
you got two movies right
yeah.
now.
Yeah. Wow. But when you come out of it, you come out a different person, and you come out of experiences that literally you could not have experienced, or you know that could not have been possible in any other way, and you feel stronger, and you feel more connected with other people as well. And ultimately, that comes down to the reason we make movies, the reason we watch movies, is to feel connected as a community. So I think as the more I go through it, that's really what drives me.
Sure. Yeah. Since you were 20, since your first film that was on, you know, in theaters. Or when was that first film? What year was that?
That was 2008. So there's this period of time when after the Steven Spielberg stuff, after getting connected to a big movie at Sony, I got connected to like five movies at different place studios around the town, from Warner Brothers to Sony to all these places. I actually didn't make a movie for 5 years.
Wow.
I didn't make anything for five. I would develop those movies. You know, you work with the writers to get it into shape. It's called development hell.
It's not producing. That's developing.
That's developing your, I mean, you're attached to direct. So when those movies get greenlit, you're the director. But as a director, that's part of your job is to shepherd the project.
Uh-huh.
But you can shepherd something for 10 years. You can shepherd something for 11 years and never go out.
Oh my goodness.
So those 5 years as a, you know, 22-year-old kid coming into this world and sort of coming in with a bang and then actually not making movies
half
five
a
years.
Decade
and every year goes by you're like no this next year we're almost there, we're like so close on this project,
you're like questioning and doubting yourself.
Absolutely.
You're like,
people are questioning you, people are like, oh yeah, that's that kid that
5 years ago did something but hasn't done squat or whatever. Wow.
So you feel that pressure, you feel that I went through a lot going through there, but I survived and you persevere through that. You have, you know, great friends and great family who are there to keep you on your feet during that point. And so my first movie was, what happened was I got a script and it was a direct to DVD movie. It was a direct to DVD movie, sequel to a dance movie. And I said, no, I was like, oh, I don't do direct to DVD.
But you hadn't even done a movie yet.
I haven't done a movie yet. For some reason I thought, so then I called my mom and she's like, when did you become a snob?
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean? Yeah, I know. It was a wake up call. And she said, you say you're a storyteller, but storytellers can tell it in a commercial, a TV show, in a movie, a direct to DVD. Like, it doesn't matter if you're true and you've never had the chance to even show yourself. You're like an NBA player that got recruited on a team, but you've been sitting on the bench. So here's your 2 minutes.
You're not even in the D League yet.
Exactly. And this maybe is the D League and you got 2 minutes. Like, go show what you can do. Prove it.
Wow.
And I realized, like, yeah, she's right. This is, you know, I'm going to make the best damn direct-to-DVD dance movie sequel ever.
Yes.
So we went in there and said, the script sucks, but we're going to change all this, all this. The studio, which was Summit, Disney had distributed the feature, but Summit was doing just the direct-to-DVD. They said yes, go ahead and do that. 2 weeks later, got a call from Disney. Oren Aviv over there said, you know, we want to hear, we heard that John was attached, that we want to hear now what that version is. So we go in and pitch. 20 minutes later, he says, we have a slot in February for you. It's going to be a feature and your budget went from $5 million to 20.
Wow.
And he's like, as long as you can deliver it in 8 months, 8 or 9 months. And I didn't know how long it takes to make a real movie. So I said, yeah, of course. And so we were like in production 2 months later. After waiting all those years, we were now starting with no script and I had to shoot in like 2 months deliver a movie in those 8 months. But that's how I got my first movie and it made, you know, over $150 million worldwide and all that stuff. So it worked out very well.
This is Step Up 2 or is it?
This is Step Up 2, The Streets, yeah.
$100 million worldwide.
$150 million worldwide.
What's a good movie make right now these days? Like, is $100 million, is that a grade? Is like the top 10%?
Well, it depends what your budget is. Our movie was, you know, $20 million. So when you
multiply that much, that's pretty good,
that's
right?
That's pretty good. Yeah, there's some marketing costs and things in there, but beyond that, we, you know, multiplied our thing by a lot. So
it's not bad.
So it's good, and we made. I mean, I think they made like five more Step Up movies since then. So I think that was
amazing. So you took a chance, and it paid off. It sounds like
good. And I got to show off what I did, but also learn. Yeah, and it was a great platform to learn how to make a studio movie, because when you make studio movies, there's other agendas. You've got to deal with a studio. You've got to deal with marketing. You've got to deal with all the things that come with it.
Right.
Because you have a responsibility too. These are putting, you know, millions and millions of dollars, which the biggest thing I had done was like $15,000. So, you actually learn how to work with a crew, a bigger crew that you can't do everything for. You know, before I was like editing and doing the sound and doing the thing, but
now you're directing
at that
everyone
point.
Else.
You've got it, just sort of like trust and learn how to communicate actually better.
So, wow.
Yeah.
What would you say is the movie that you grew the most during that you were producing or directing? And what movie was that?
Well, every movie is very different. The reason I take movies is usually some sort of thing that I've never done before.
A challenge.
Yes, exactly. I think life is too short. You spend so much time on these things and you literally don't see your regular friends. The good ones.
We've been trying to do this for like 2 years.
Yeah, it's true. And you get sucked into this weird world. And so you want to make sure that it means something to you ultimately.
Not just to make money or
not just
whatever,
to make money. I mean, some people can do that. Every filmmaker, again, has their own journey, whether they want to make those five films and that's it.
Yeah.
Or they want to say that one thing and that's it. Or they never want to touch a studio movie. Studio movies are not for everybody. But for me, I grew up in an environment where movies were a celebration. Movies were where we'd all go to the movies and get scared or laugh or feel something that we wanted to get out of our system. So although I love the community of going to watch a movie, when people would boo at the screen or cheer at the hero. So those are the type of movies I love and I love to create. And so each movie I take is usually something crazy. So like Step Up to the Street, that was really to prove myself. And I knew dancers. So that was fun to go do and learn the language of dance more than I had known, especially street dance, which I wasn't as familiar with. Met a bunch of great people. Step Up 3D, we shot in New York. So that was like a dream for any filmmaker to shoot in New York. And I had met a bunch of
this is actually dancers. In New York, not a Paramount fake
this
New
is
York.
Like on the streets in New York. It was awesome. We shot all around town, Washington Square Park, Times Square, Grand Central Station. We picked all the best places. So and we have, you know, dancers after dance. We have hundreds of dancers and dancers that I met along the way that I was like, oh, that person's really interesting. I'd never seen that on film before. So we could reverse engineer some characters and stuff like
that.
Cool. But I got to learn 3D. This was before Avatar was out. And then what came out? So then Never Say Never, the documentary, which I'd never done a documentary before. And being on tour with somebody is a very different
feel. So 2 months on tour?
It was like a month on. It was actually – we had done some prep stuff, so I guess it was probably mounted to 2 months. But actually shooting was about a month. And that was really fun because you could be there for all the intensity but get out before it went too crazy. And then G.I. Joe was a huge leap after that because it was a big $125 million
The Rock
action.
Was on that, right?
The Rock, Bruce Willis,
wow.
Channing Tatum was also in that. So we have a big cast.
What was that like?
It was awesome. The Rock is the coolest person.
He's one of the guys I've been trying to get on since the beginning of the show. He's one of like the three guys I really
want
to get on.
He is everything you want him to, you want really? Your hero to be. He is. He's so kind and badass
at the same time,
no apologies, funny as hell.
That's awesome.
He aspires for perfection, so it pushes you as well. But he's like, he'll text me like, I remember when we were about to release the movie, like things like, this is your time, John, let's do this shit.
Wow.
Like random texts. And you're like, yes, yeah, we're gonna do this. So he's everything that he that you think he is. That's who he truly is. I don't doubt that he's going to be president of the United States one day.
Like, holy cow.
His ambition is big and his heart is big and you can feel it in everything he does.
Amazing.
And he's focused. So,
that's cool. That's, so it was $150 million.
That was $125 million movie.
Wow.
Which is, daunting and big explosions and thousands of extras.
Wow.
And, you're dealing with a franchise that's been around. So there's a lot of pressure from, whether it's Hasbro or Paramount or wherever. So there's a lot of responsibility over that. Fanboys that, you know, wanted a very specific way.
Sure, sure.
So I learned a lot in that. And then we did another Justin Bieber movie, which was really fun. But I got to do his live show this time, his actual concert tour. And that was a great experience because it sort of broadened my view of like, you don't have all the control when you're doing a show because the artist is on stage and you can't edit anything. They're doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
But that was fun to work with Justin at that time. And, And then with Gem, we did this movie for very little. We did it through with Jason Blum, who does all these horror films mm-hmm. for like less than $5 million.
Wow.
So to do a big musical for $5 million is a challenge, but I get full creative control in it, wow. which is really fun. So I'm sort of using all that stuff. So, but I got to use all my friends from film school, and we got to build
cool.
something that's very personalized and shoot in L.A., and then Now You See Me was a big daunting thing because you have a cast that is on another level. You're
yeah.
working with legends, Morgan Freeman, Michael Caine, Jesse Eisenberg, who I really respect a lot, Mark Ruffalo. These guys are legends, if not already in the making. And Woody Harrelson, he plays twins in the movie. So
yeah.
there's a lot of challenges in that as well. But every single one, I think you learn about not just the process because – the trade of making movies, but you can hire a lot of people who know those trades better
yeah.
and you can rely on them, but about more about how I handle, how you stay on your vision or how you create a collective vision, without being a committee movie, you know, so that, and how you get what you want and how you protect the things that you need to protect and fight the things that you need to avoid. So, yeah.
So you go into every movie with your own vision. How do you enroll thousands of cast members potentially in these bigger movies in that vision as opposed to them all saying, you know, the big legendary actors who are like, oh, I want to do it this way. Or what do you think about this, John? Or, you know, how about we add this in there?
Yeah.
How do you stay focused towards a vision with all that power and people pulling you different directions?
Yeah. I've dealt with it in different ways for different movies. And I think I'm still learning how the best way possible. You know, you look at other leaders and you look at people like our president, or you look at other CEOs of how they run their business. Some people do it through fear. Some people do it through communication and love. Some people do it through understanding. There's so many different ways, and all are effective, to be honest. It's sort of what fits your own style and what kind of life you want to live as well. Because as a director, I could scare the shit out of people and do big tantrums and leave the room and quit and get what I want. And that would be actually really darn effective. And sometimes I do want to do that to get it wrong. But I don't really want to live that life.
Yeah.
I think life is bigger than those things. And, you know, that affects your energy anyway. And I just choose not to do that. And I do think that, like a computer, like a multiprocessor as a group, as long as you're choosing the right things, there's a lot of great ideas that can be mined, and those things together have a synergy that one person could never create.
Sure.
And so I love that idea. But as I get through it, I think the most important thing I've learned about communicating the vision or getting a unified vision is literally just one by one. Like when it's too daunting to think like, oh, I need to make sure everybody, we have that scene in the right place. I need to like blast out this email that like cuts down their ideas and gets to the vision. It's literally like,
it's one by one
sitting down, talking to someone, looking them in the eye and saying, let me understand your concerns here. Most people have concerns for the right reasons. They may not have the right answer, and you may not have the right answer, but as long as you have the same goal of trying to fix this concern of like, I'm just not feeling this character. You know, some person could say, well, can you cut this scene? I think you listened more of the note of, oh, what does it mean that they don't feel this character? Which means they actually don't care about they don't know what they want in this movie, which means it's not about that scene. It's about two scenes before that. And so by communicating with that actor, it's like, you know what? I think it's actually this point in the scene where you open your diary and we see exactly what you want. So by this point later, we'll be rooting for you instead of not knowing why you even want that thing. And I think it's a much more effective way. It takes a lot more time and a lot more energy and a lot more back and forth, but it's a much more, I think, healthier way.
Sure.
But also that process of finding it makes you connect with that actor, with that producer, with the studio much more. And it is a harder process.
Much harder than just saying, suck it up, do your job, let's go.
Yes. Right? I always say I would make movies for free. If you gave me a camera and actors, like, let's go. I'll do it all day long.
Yeah.
I can eat ramen all day long. It doesn't matter. what I get paid for is dealing with the politics and doing that job, which is also part of storytelling. It's also a part about understanding why you want to tell this story or why, what, why other someone else wants to tell. Everyone came to this story for a different reason. Mm. And by understanding the purpose that everyone came here for, you may not be able to fulfill that for every single person, but you can find your balance of how you want to fulfill those things. And maybe they have a purpose that is actually bigger than yours that you jump on.
So. Yeah, yeah. What would you say is the biggest lesson you've learned about yourself through in the last 15 years of doing movies? The most important lesson you've learned?
That I learned about myself? Gosh, there's so many things.
Every movie you probably learn 20 new things about yourself.
Yes, but I think the one that has allowed me to survive the most is that I have really great family and friends. Mm. And I don't know why that happened. I don't know. I didn't purposely do that. I'm attracted to really great, good people. And for some reason, they believe in me. Mm. And for some reason, when I am not as good of a friend, sometimes they're still there for me.
Wow.
And for some reason, when things are down, they know suddenly, randomly to call and to just keep me going, because those are the people, those are the only people who really count when you're, you know, at your deathbed and,
right.
and you've wrapped up your life here. And so, and, you know, you don't appreciate your friends and your family all the time or how lucky you are to have those people. But I think there's no way I could be doing what I'm doing without those people having to help me in that. And I've relied on that actually now much more, and I can count on that more. Where I sort of before was like, I don't need it. I'm good.
You can do it on your own. Yeah. What would you say you're most grateful for recently in your life?
You know, I'm always grateful, I'm always grateful for, like I said, friends and family. Like, I think that that is the most powerful thing. You can have all the money in the world, you can have all the support in the world, but that is what keeps you up. But recently, I think I'm grateful to, I think I'm grateful that I get the opportunity to do what I love. Like, as someone was like, aren't you going to take a vacation? Like, you've done a movie every year. You need a vacation. And, I think if you, and I'm sure you feel the same way, if you're doing what you love, this is vacation.
This is vacation. It's
this
fun.
Is it.
Like, you don't need to get away for anything.
There's nothing to get away from. If I went somewhere on an island, which I love to do,
you'd still be thinking about things.
Like, the only way to go there is to think about things. So, so I feel very lucky because I don't think everybody gets that opportunity.
That's
and
great.
I don't think everyone, gets to even really find what they love or even want. I was lucky when I was a kid. To somehow fall upon the thing that I would love and that would give me a voice, because I was a shy, well, sometimes a shy kid, most of the time a shy kid in front of public people. In my home, I was probably really annoying. But I didn't have a voice. I liked to draw, wasn't the best drawer. I loved to be on stage, but wasn't great at being on stage. I loved to animate stuff, wasn't great at that. Like to play songs, wasn't great at playing those songs. But film, I understood those things, which could help my film, but that's what I could speak. And that's, to me, what saved my life and gave me a voice. And I feel very lucky that I found that in third grade.
Amazing.
I never doubted it.
Amazing. What's the movie that you've been inspired by the most that you wish you would have, you'd been like, man, that'd have been a great story to tell. Like, what's the movie that you're like, well, man, you could watch over and over?
Well, Goodfellas, I watch a lot before making a movie, because I feel like it's such a unique vision. It's such, I could never make that movie. Literally, the subject matter, the world, the tone, it's just not my style in any way. But I love watching it because it reminds me that a scene can be a scene, but the way you shoot a scene is the scene. And so I love it. Inspires me every time that it pushes you to look at your script and say, this is just the beginning of what you should be doing. That E.T., of course, is one of my first movies that I ever watched. Has a lot of influence. I love it's an honest story, but it has a magical twist to it. And I love that. So
what's the movie that you were so excited to watch that let you down, where you were like, oh, it could have been told in this way and it would have been the best movie ever?
Oh, that's tough. That is tough.
Whether it maybe be a story you already knew about or a character that you're like excited to see what they created.
Yes. I mean, I hate judging movies, especially being in the movie business now.
Of course.
Because it's a miracle that movies get made in the first place.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
And I don't think anyone ever intends to make a shitty movie. And even if you think it's shitty, it probably other people find other things in it. I mean, even our step-up movies, they may not be the Academy Award-winning movies. And we may have a 25% on Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm telling you, there's a lot of people who became dancers because of that, or people who watch that stuff over and over again. It plays on ABC Family every time. People, there is a spirit to it that goes beyond a review for it. So it's really hard for me. And when people judge your movie, that everyone has the right to do that. It's just like music. Like, it's a very personal thing. Everyone feels like an expert because they are an expert in their world of it. But I try to avoid.
You'd rather not talk about
judging
it.
A movie.
Sure. Well, what's the one you thought could have gone a different direction that would have made it in your mind?
Yeah.
More powerful. Maybe for other people they thought it was great, but in your mind could have told a different story.
I would say.
Put you out on the spot here.
This is really on the spot. I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to think of a movie that I've. All the movies I've seen recently have been pretty darn. Amazing. I just saw Ex Machina. It was awesome.
Oh, so good.
That's a movie that I'd be like, I want to make.
That's a cool movie.
That movie.
I watch a lot of movies. I go to the Grove like or ArcLight, once or twice a week at least.
Which one do you think?
Oh man, that's a good.
Yeah,
question.
It's not so easy. Right?
I have to think and go back to the archives. I think maybe like. Captain America or something. Mm-hmm.
The first one or the?
I'm thinking the first one, yeah.
Even the second one was great.
Even like Wolverine. Mm-hmm. I was like, it was good, but I felt like it could have been even more epic.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
some of those characters, I'm like, So.
There's so many things, when you look at Avengers, there's so many things that it has to serve at a certain point. These companies are owned by conglomerates now, and they have bigger purposes than just the movie itself. You look at, even Cars. It's John Lasseter. It's Cars. It should be a genius movie. I don't love Cars as much as the other Pixar movies. I mean, they have a high bar to hit, so it's still a good movie. But and John Lasseter is a genius. So how does that? But you see the toy sales, and they make. Way more
on
toy
the toy
sales
sale, on licensing
than any other product. They have more than Toy Story, more than any of those things. And so, in a way, these movies are more like commercials for those toys.
Yeah.
So, there's a lot of different agendas in movies nowadays than what they used to.
How does negotiating work? I want to ask a few more questions. I feel like I could do this for another hour with you, but how does the negotiating work for you right now when you're working on a movie that's a $5 million movie that you just did compared to a $125 million movie? Is it a flat rate? Is it a flat rate plus commission on how the movie does? How does that work for most directors?
Well, they're very different. Every movie is a different deal, basically, and depending on how it's going to be released, depending on who's behind it, all those things. For me, I love the trade-off of doing a big movie, a small movie. It gives you, when you do a smaller movie, you get a little bit more control. You get a little bit more. It's a little more what you remember as making movies because you've got to figure it out, and it sometimes pushes you to be more creative. But every filmmaker, what I just went through, I think every filmmaker should go through. It was like financial whiplash going from a $5 million, not for myself personally, but for the movie itself, going from a $5 million movie to a $125 million movie, back to back, you literally, but it's the same process.
Right.
No matter what resources you have, you come down to what actually making a movie is about. And what you need as a filmmaker to tell your story so you don't get caught up in, I need 20 trucks to bring 10,000 extras.
Sure, sure.
You realize the reality of the line that you can draw of your art and what you need to say. And actually how much those things aren't that important. Yes, if you need scope and you're trying to tell this story of a specific thing, that costs money, that costs people, it costs resources. But ultimately telling a story, you could be next to a fire at a campsite and be telling just as compelling story as in a movie theater in the dark.
For $50, a camera and whatever.
Exactly. I mean, storytelling is storytelling. You could be on a podcast with no pictures and be painting every picture.
Of course.
You could be saying no words and just be doing sounds and tell very specific. So it, what I see my job as is less of a movie maker, a filmmaker, and more of a storyteller. The genre that happens to be in is audiovisual, and big, you know, big theater sort of presentation. But I feel like that's not my skill set. That's just the tool that I'm using in that thing. To me, if you gave me a commercial, we just did the Virgin America safety video, which is like the, you know, how to put on your seatbelt stuff at Virgin America. You can watch that on the flight. And, but even something
like
that.
There's like dancing happening right here. Yeah, it's awesome.
Stuff. So even that was like, we had to work with the FAA to figure out how best to make people pay attention and I felt just as sort of emotionally involved in something as small and crazy as that as a bigger movie.
Wow.
So it all comes from the same well. So that's what I try to hone more, less about like, how does that camera work and how do I zoom in on the blah, 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 or how, what's that do that? And more of like, oh, what if that helps me, communicate something more in what I'm doing, then I'll pay attention.
But I would assume, you know, $125 million movie, you'd be getting a bigger upfront pay as opposed to a $5 million movie. You're making like, you know, you can't make $1 million on a $5 million movie upfront as you could potentially a $125 million movie. So how does the back end work for you?
So something like what we just did with Blumhouse. So Jason Blum does these a lot. And his model is this, any movie under $5 million. So it's like and they're usually like two or three.
Right.
And they're horror films. So in a very specific genre. You have to shoot in LA. You only get a certain amount of time for pre-production, production and post-production. So those are lockdowns. You cannot negotiate that. You cannot go overtime. You cannot do anything. It is a very specific thing. So your process changes in that. You don't get paid. You get paid like minimum upfront. So you get paid, you're betting on yourself basically because your back end is bigger than you'll ever get in any of those bigger movies. And you get full creative control, which is the kicker.
Pretty cool. So that's kind of fun for you because it's like,
it's a fun thing.
I get
for
to
me.
Do whatever I want. You can't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
Because I'm getting paid nothing up front. So let's, you know.
And you're betting on your own.
Your storytelling and your creativity.
Your own movie. Yeah. And that's fun at a certain point when you're like, let's bet on ourselves right now. I mean, I think it was like Ethan Hawke who did The Purge and all that stuff. Like, ultimately, The Purge made $100 and something million and has sequels and all this stuff.
It was like a $5 million movie or what?
It was like a $4 million movie.
Wow.
And, you know, when you're making that kind of multiple and you're getting first dollar gross, which big studios don't do that anymore, you're making a lot more money on that little one
than you would on a big one.
We would have on
really?
A big one. But only if it hits that scale, you know, it hurts, it hits
gotcha.
A scale. So things like even like, Believe, Justin Bieber's Believe, where, Paramount was not involved in that one. I did not get paid as much up front, but ultimately, and the movie didn't make as much as Never Say Never by a lot, but
still did well.
It did well. And I made more money on that one personally than I did on Never Say Never.
Really?
Because it's just a different.
And you're still getting royalties on these movies, right?
And on these, all these movies, you continue to get royalties.
Amazing.
If they're you know, the movies I make are fun because they get to be played. They are enjoyed over and over again.
They're on TNT and ABC.
So
Family
they're always on all those channels. So, you're constantly getting,
nice royalty checks.
Yeah,
that's good.
Nice. Yeah. That's a surprise. You're like, oh, sweet. Cool.
What's the story you want to tell next that you've never told?
I don't know, to be honest. I've cleared my slate before. When I was doing these two movies, I was like, I need to just clear it and then, see where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I think as artists, what's fun is that you get to evolve and change. And, I don't like to try to preempt where I'm going to be because it's a lot of, energy and emotion and years on the line. So I like to, you know, even now you see me, I could not have predicted that I would have done that movie. It came to me. I get a lot of different movies that come to me. It came to me at a time where I felt like that's what I needed and wanted to do. Go to London, shoot a movie. Wow. London and Macau. So you got to do a little China shoot as well. And with these great actors and magic, it all seemed very,
it's pretty cool.
How could you say no to that? And having come just off of a smaller movie, it was like a really fun jump to do that. And so, we'll see what the next year
That's
brings,
nice.
But I'm, eyes wide open and ears open and everything sort of open to accept things and see where that may be. So.
That's cool. Two final questions. One is, with all the stories you've told, with everything you've said, you've put out a lot of great content. If it was all erased, everything was gone, and you had a piece of paper or you had one final video, 60-second video that you got to put up on your YouTube channel is the only video that people ever saw of you ever again.
Yes.
It was the three truths that you know to be true about your experience from making movies, life, everything you've seen and done, three truths that you would give back to the world. Here's the final three things that you need to know about what you can do to be, you know, about the world. What would you say as your final video?
Those three things.
Three truths about what you've experienced in life, the things you know about it, and what you would want people to take away if that was your only message you can give to them.
Well, one would be, and this is something that I think why we make movies, and this is something why I got into movies, and this is something that I think is in all stories, is that you are not alone. I think that we, most of our lives, feel alone and detached and out of place and trying to find our path and trying to find how we fit in, and which is normal. And I think the reason we make movies, or the reason I make movies specifically, is to say your struggle is exactly where you're supposed to be, because you're not alone in that struggle, and we're all going through that, and that's okay. I think as you go through your struggles, that's like the most powerful thing you can do to get through that.
Right.
Second one is something, a piece of advice I got a long time ago, which is, you are what you do every day. So like, I was like, well, how do I become a director? And this person said, well, no one's going to give you that label. No one's going to put that on your door. You just are, or you're not. No one's going to give you a business card that says you're an entrepreneur one day. You just either are or not. And you are what you do. If you're a director, you direct something every day of your life. If you're a writer, you just write every day, whether someone's paying you or not.
Yeah.
If you give little white lies here and there, guess what? You're a liar. It doesn't matter how small or how big. That's what you are. And I think that's in all aspects of my life. I'm not saying I'm perfect at any of those things, but I try to check myself on the things that I do, even as stupid as like rolling a stop sign. In my mind, I'm like, well, that's what you are. If you are doing that, you slide things and do things, which is fine. I mean, I do it all the time.
Right.
Maybe that's what I am, but I like to remind myself of that because that's the only thing that you give to this earth is what you're doing and what you're being. And the third one, I think it's something to do with appreciate who you have or what you have with the things that are around you. I think life goes by so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And every time, but at the same time, every time I say that, life just keeps going longer and longer. So I guess life is actually long as well. But the things that you affect, or that affect you, are the things that are right there next to you, and appreciate that you were given those things, or that those things were that those things found you, because that's all the gifts that we were given here. Mm-hmm. So I would say, I've never been asked that question, I never said that loud, so I'd have to recheck if that was right. But off the top of my head, I think those are the three things.
Those are great. So, yeah, those are great. One final question, but before I ask you that, where should we go to connect with you? Where do you like to hang out the most online? Where should we?
Mm-hmm. Twitter. I'm on Twitter all the time.
Yeah.
Both good and bad. Bring it. Let's go.
At John Chu.
at John M. Chu. JonMchu.
Okay.
Instagram as well, at John M. Chu. Those are the places sort of that I
if you want to check out the archives of your YouTube videos, check those out as well.
Yes.
You have a huge following, but you don't put any videos out anymore.
Yeah. Back in the day, you know, when
the Legion of Extraordinary.
The LXD, which is great.
Amazing.
You should check that out on YouTube.
Great.
But also we had this battle with Miley Cyrus. And this is after the 5 years of emptiness that I didn't do anything. By that time, YouTube was created. And I had promised myself from then on, I would never have a five-year drought of making anything. Even if I wasn't doing a movie, I would make something and post it online. So these things are the things that help me all the different movies.
That's cool. So make sure to reach out with you, and you get back to people sometimes here and there. Yeah, cool.
For sure.
Before I ask the final question, I want to acknowledge you for a moment, John, for the way you create and inspire greatness in other people. You know, before I even knew who you were, you made me cry. And you made me want to watch the movie over and over again. And you made me learn more about myself through the story you told. And I was a kid in Ohio watching this movie before I even knew that you were even the director. And so I want to acknowledge you for your creativity and your honesty and your ability to bring the greatest inspiration in every story you tell to impact the maximum amount of people. I think you've been given an incredible platform, and I'm so glad that you're the one who's directing these movies, because
you
get to inspire so many people to live better lives, to think differently, to check themselves and ask them, how am I showing up in the world? Even if it's through a silly entertainment thing or something that may not seem like it, we're affected by what you're creating. So I want to acknowledge you for your gifts and the talents that you bring to the world.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, man.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Final questions, what I ask everyone at the end.
Yes.
Is what's your definition of greatness?
Definition of greatness? Well, I don't think you can define your own greatness. I think that is something that others can say to you. And so in my mind, your greatness is how much you, give to others. Because by giving to others means you have some sort of self, you've gotten yourself in a position or found something in your own journey that you can share. And I think, that takes a journey in itself, which is a whole thing. But I think when you can actually start thinking about others and not just about your own survival, I think you've reached your greatness, and you should continue to give that way.
I love it. John Chu, thanks for coming, brother.
Appreciate it, man.
Appreciate
it. It's been fun.
And there you have it, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure to head back to the show notes at lewishouse.com/237. Check out all the stuff that John is up to. Make sure to follow him over on Instagram and social media. I'll have that all linked up over at the show notes. Check out his movies that are coming out. This guy is an incredible director, incredible storyteller, and visionary. So make sure to check them out. Follow him and be inspired. Also, if you were inspired by this story, make sure to share this with your friends over on social media and tag me at Lewis Howes and at John Chu over on Instagram to stay connected and hear about what we're up to and where you're listening to this podcast. So thank you guys so much for all you do. Thank you for continually supporting me and supporting this show. It's why I'm able to bring on guests like John and incredible, inspiring people, because you continue to listen and apply it to your life and spread the message of greatness. You're incredible. You're up to big things. The world has a lot of greatness out there, and it's time you go capture it. You know what time it is? It's time to go out there and do something great.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang and Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/L-E-W-I-S.